Good morning. Let me welcome you all here this morning. And welcome to December. Can you guys believe it? The year 2022 is nearly at an end. And does it feel like the north wind has come in the middle of, well, at the start of December? I feel it. I think it's the Melbourne friends who have brought it along with them. I blame you. Well, what does December mean to you? Some good things, I hope. I hope that it might mean some yummy food is stocked in your pantry right now, or pulling out the decorations, or dusting off the Christmas carol CDs. Hopefully your family has some nice traditions to look forward to amongst the pressures and the busyness and the shopping. Ugh, hate shopping. For our family, December was a bit more momentous. One year. One Monday morning that December, Ben and I went along to an appointment on level 3 of the Armidale Hospital, and a few hours later, lovely little baby came out into the world. He's my little shepherd boy from that year. A newborn in any family is a joyous occasion, isn't it? But in church this December, we join with 2.2 million people, billion people I should say, to celebrate an even more momentous birth. It's not just for a cute baby. It's not just to celebrate their height, their weight, their head circumference. By the way, can anybody tell me why they report the head circumference? I mean, tell me later. Tell me at morning tea. It's been bugging me. Sorry? Shouldn't have brought it up. Sorry, everyone. But what we're celebrating with 2.2 billion people this December is much more momentous, isn't it? Because the opening pages of the New Testament tell us that once in our history, God chose to perform an incredible, amazing mystery. That God Himself, came down. He took on human flesh. And he lived among us, and he lived as one of us. And we get our theme, Emmanuel, from our passage today. Verse 23 says, "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. God with us. Each word is loaded with so much meaning, isn't it? So let me take each one in turn and offer some thoughts. Number one, it's God who's with us. The primary message of Christmas is not, be loving, be kind, the gift of giving, which some brands are telling us that Christmas is all about. It's not even about, being good and Santa will come to you. The primary message of Christmas is that God has come down. You see, this baby isn't just one of 300,000 babies that are born every day. This baby was God incarnate, God in the flesh. And isn't it extraordinary as the world tries to inch God out of Christmas more and more? There would be no Christmas if God had not done this in the first place. Originally, it was God's idea to get close to us. And now we seem to have shut God out of Christmas. And so we don't have billboards or Christmas catalogues that tell us that Christ the Saviour is born. We have season's greetings, we have ho ho ho, we have a Christmas without God. In the chapter after our Bible reading today, in Matthew 2, it's on page 966 if you've still got it open, one of the key words is worship. And it's not just ethereal worship of the God of the Bible, it's worship of the baby in the manger. Now, I spent a total of 5 days in Armidale Hospital, and some of you lovely folk came to visit me, thank you. Some of you brought flowers. I even had dumplings and soup brought to me. That was amazing. But strangely, none of you came and knelt before baby Xander. Why is that? Nobody did that. Nobody bent their knee in worship of the baby. You see, the message of the Bible is truly that the baby was God. And that is why the baby was worshipped. Its meaning should not be lost on us. Obviously, Jesus did not stay a baby. He grew up. And do you remember when the disciples were on the boat with Jesus, Malcolm the one back, in that fierce squall? Jesus was still sleeping and they were freaking out. They were saying, "Master, don't you care if we drown?" And Jesus, he got up, he spoke to the storm. He said, "Wind, be still." And at that point, Malcolm won back. The story could have ended. Everyone could have hugged and cheered and they could have just said, "Yes, we were saved." But no. The text actually says that at that moment, they became much afraid. That is, rather than easing their fear, Jesus intensified their fear. Jesus was scarier than the wild, impersonal, uncontrollable force that could have killed them. The disciples asked, "What manner of man is this, that even the wind and the waves obey him?" They had never encountered anyone so different, so separate, so other, that he could command an impersonal force and the sea would obey. They realized they were in the presence of the Holy, and that was scary. Another occasion, the same people, the same sea. The disciples had been fishing all night and their nets were empty. Peter and Jesus were talking. Jesus asked Peter, "Well, how did it go?" Peter said, "No luck, we've got nothing." But when Jesus intervened, the text says their nets began to break. The boat began to sink because it was so laden with fish. And what happened? Peter suddenly looked at Jesus and he said, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man." It's very natural, isn't it? If you're in the presence of someone great, you feel small. If you're in the presence of someone really smart, you start feeling dumb. If you find yourself in the presence of God, well, you start feeling inadequate. And it was the way of the things in the Old Testament, right? God was too pure to dwell with man, and so we needed intercessors. We needed priests, a system of laws, rituals, so that we could have distance from God, so we wouldn't be zapped by God's holiness. We had blockades, barriers. We had outer courts, inner courts. We had curtains and walls. But the wonderful thing is that in the New Testament, Jesus changed everything. May I remind you of this hope-filled verse in John 3. It's after the famous one. It says, "God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him." Here was the holiest man who ever lived, Jesus. God, the eternal Son, he never sinned. And instead of judging, instead of condemning the world, he used his holiness to save the world through him. He was like Midas. Everything, everyone he touched became cleaner, became freer, became forgiven of their sin. They became more alive, less afflicted. People were offered hope and renewal when they found, when they thought that they were lost. You see, God's holiness has always been a problem to humanity, but Jesus purifies, Jesus cleanses, Jesus restores. God's holiness is not a problem for sinners if Jesus stands in between God and us. My second point, Emmanuel, he is God with us. Have you ever wondered if you won one of those radio competitions where you won a trip and won a dinner opportunity with your favourite celebrity, what on earth you would say to that celebrity? You know those competitions I'm talking about? You know, for me, it doesn't matter who it is that I imagine sitting across from me at the table, whether it's Frank Sinatra, whether it's Cher, Justin Bieber, Pavarotti, I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to go. I would have to ring up and tell their people, sorry, but, you know, she's sick today. Thanks for the flights. Thanks for the accommodation. I'll take the trip, but I just cannot face having dinner with Justin Bieber. I mean, what would we talk about? I guarantee you we would have no friends in common. We move in such different circles that, oof, dinner together would just be torture. Last week, Susan McPhee told me about a kid who couldn't get a prom date. And so, this is a feel-good story. She reached out to Dwayne Johnson, who is, you know who he is? Yes. The Rock. Yes. She reached out to Dwayne Johnson on social media and said, would you be my prom date? I don't know why. Like, this guy is like a dad. I mean, you know, she's 17. Anyway, his response came over the school intercom one day. He couldn't come, but he had hired a movie theater for this girl, for all her friends, for all her family, to watch him on the big screen of his latest blockbuster, and there'd be free-flowing soda, free-flowing popcorn. So that was really, really sweet. But my point today is he couldn't come. He was important, and she was not. He was off filming for his new film in Hawaii, and he couldn't make it to the Minnesota formal. I have two personal anecdotes that are similar in nature, and no, I haven't asked any celebrity to come to the formal with me, that's not it. One year, the school that I'm involved with decided to invite the Vice Chancellor of the university to give the speech day address. Unfortunately, she couldn't attend. She was too busy. And when my own high school celebrated its centenary, so 100 years, someone had the bright idea to invite the Honourable John Howard, the then Prime Minister, to attend. Unfortunately, he couldn't come. And so they read out his official rejection letter at speech day. Not many VIPs will condescend to an ordinary person's level, right? They might send a delegate, they might send a nice letter, but for them to sacrifice their personal time to personally attend, well, that's a big ask. You might have heard of James Hudson Taylor. He was the famous missionary who took the gospel to the Far East. He was a well-off doctor in Britain, and he could have had a comfortable life if he wanted to, but he gave all of that up. And what happened? He went to China. He learnt Chinese. He made up his own dictionary to compare the Chinese Bible with the English. He did what no missionary did in his day. He grew his hair long. He fashioned it into an oriental braid, the pigtail. He exchanged his European clothes with oriental clothes. He ate Chinese food. He adopted Chinese customs. He even took on a Chinese name. Why did he do it? He wanted to show that he was one of them, that he was there for good and for their good. What Hudson Taylor did was only a fraction of what God, the Creator, did. God took on human flesh, and he identified with humans in every way. He came into our brokenness. He didn't have to do it, but he did. And the reason was because God wanted to be with us. 2 Corinthians says, it was for our sake he became poor. God didn't send a delegate. He took on flesh to say, I will join you, to say, never will I leave you or forsake you. This is my third point. God with us. Who is the us? You see, when God set himself into the scene, when he wrote himself into our history, he doesn't go into the center of things. He chose an unwed teenager in Nazareth. Nazareth, right? It's basically, roll your eyes. This is the town of which the disciples said, Nazareth, what on earth can anything good come out of Nazareth? He sent his angels to shepherds. Shepherds who were considered bottom feeders in Jewish society. Rabbinic sources would say they weren't allowed to be court witnesses because they are disreputable people. In the Midrash, in Jewish writings, it was said that there is no more disreputable an occupation than that of a shepherd. If you were a pious Jew, you weren't allowed to trade with them, because it was assumed that whatever they had was probably stolen goods. He sent a star to Babylonian astrologers, of all people, people from Babylon. Now, if you know your Israelite history, you would know that Babylon is far from God's treasured possession. God does not go to the center. He does not need to go to the center. He does not need the help of any worldly power to push his agenda through. God goes to the fringes. In fact, he goes to whomever he wants. He goes to the Samaritan woman. He goes to the leader of the Jewish priesthood. He goes to the disabled guy who's lying next to the pool. And as long as the fringe come to Jesus, they become the new center. When he calls people, and when people respond, they become the new center around Jesus. Because Jesus is the center of what emanates. Everyone who comes to him, no matter how much of an outcast they are in the eyes of the world, are accepted into the center, never to be excluded again. And as long as the worldly centers continue to resist Jesus, they move away from the center. They're like the gray fish. They move away from the center out to the fringes. They become the outsiders of God's saving plan. Where are you? Are you the part of the us for whom God came? Are you willing to worship the baby whom they call Emmanuel? Are you willing to make this God-man, who is both so scarily holy and compassionate at the same time? Are you willing to make him the center of your life? Well, the incarnation, it gave us Christmas, but it's also turned the whole world upside down. But this thing is for sure. The incarnation is God saying to us that he is not distant, he has drawn near, and he cares. He cares enough to take on our flesh and blood forever, to make the unholy holy. Happy Advent as we contemplate these things together.